Hi guys, it is Dom here from Soundsphere Magazine. I just wanted to intro this one. Ben Lefwich and I go way back on the York, UK scene. Love his music. I'm a big fan of his music as well. We're going to talk about some things, break the new record. We're going to go into a little bit more detail about the self-reflection on the record and in past releases as well. We get a little bit deep on this one. We could have gone on for hours, as I'm sure you'll see. We talk about some legends of the York scene as well. So yeah, thank you so much for watching this. Thank you so much for giving up your time. As always, don't always do intros to interviews and stuff, I know. So really appreciate you. Really appreciate you investing your time and energy into this. And thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you soon. Right, Ben. So it is a pleasure to sit down with you after a few years. We've talked off the record a bunch of times, but an on the record interview with you. This is a real pleasure for me to sit down with you, and just wanted to kind of check in at first. I know we had a bit of time off camera, but how are you feeling? New record's out. You've been doing some reflecting. How are you feeling as we sit down together in early March of 2024?
Yeah, man. Well, it's always great to see you, brother. And, you know, I love you loads. And you and I go way back. And, yeah, I feel right now in this moment today, I feel okay, you know. Yeah, the new record came out, you know, a couple of months ago. It's called Some Things Break, 10 new songs. And, you know, I'm really proud of it, man. I know that's kind of a base thing to say or something, but I think it's the most fearless and kind of unmetaphorical that I've ever been. And, you know, me and Jimmy Hogarth kind of produced the whole thing, and he's a legendary kind of seasoned producer, and we really left no stone unturned. You know, we wrote way more than we needed. Not all of them were good, and that enabled us to kind of slim it down and just find like the truest thing that was the essence of this title that appeared kind of towards the end of the process, called Some Things Break, which is really just an acceptance of life on life's terms, you know. So yeah. it's you know, I'm 34 now, and I made my first album when I was like, I don't know, 18 or something, maybe 18 19, something like this. And I used metaphors then, because it was all I knew how to use, and I like doing that, but I think it would be less congruent and true for me now, you know. So I feel like I'm just flowing heart first, and I'm so grateful for this gift, you know, that I've been given, and the privilege I've been afforded in life to get to spend time to work on it, you know.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And that's one of my, you know, one of my questions was, as long as I've known you and we've talked about sort of using music as catharsis and kind of, you know, escapism in different forms. You know, when I listen to, you know, I'm Always Saying Sorry, and then obviously the title track as well, Some Things Break, that rawness, that, you know, this stuff is some of the stuff, even as a listener, where I don't know where your head was at. Like, this is raw stuff. It must have been difficult maybe to write down. So can you talk me through, you know, when you were building this record, you started the record with I'm Always Saying Sorry, you know, Some Things Break, the title track comes in the middle. What were you thinking? How were you feeling when you wrote those two particular tracks? Because there's some strong themes, love, self-reflection, you know, even a little bit of self, not criticism, but certain, I will call it self-reflection, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, I love those two songs. I think they're definitely, they hit deep, and I get that. And I'm not afraid of that. Self-reflection is a kind way of putting it, but I'm not afraid of self-criticism either. You know, when there was a lot in me that needed to be criticized, you know, and I think there's a lot in the world, and often in people's hearts, that is, yeah. Criticized is a funny word, but at least for me, I can only speak for myself, needs to be changed, you know? And, those two songs in particular, I'll never forget it. We Jimmy Hogarth, who produced the album, has got a studio in London, and we have a friend called John Green, who's an amazing piano player. And when I first started this album, one of my references for it production-wise was an album called Midair by Paul Buchanan, who's a singer of the Blue Nile, which is a real minimal, just like vocal, piano, cinema kind of, by cinema, I mean atmosphere kind of deal. And I went into the studio that week. It was the same week that we did, that Jimmy and I and Jamie Squire had done some stuff with 1975. And we had 2 days, the 2 days before that started, to write some songs. And I'd It was as the world was opening up again. This must have been 2021. We wrote and recorded these. I'd come out of a breakup and like an amicable, relatively amicable mutual breakup. And with I'm always saying sorry. This person had told me a story of a man that they knew at university who was going through his life like a human hurricane. And I remember once saying, she was telling me this story and, basically how selfish this guy was. And I said, wow, that sounds like me, or at least what I can be like off beam. And she was like, nah, he's nothing like you, you do. And it was funny, but she only knew me in this moment, And so one thing that I like to do when I'm writing with artists a lot and when I'm by myself is, and it re there's a song, if there are any songwriters listening, this might maybe it's useful, but like writing from the perspective of someone else. So you kind of talk, you can kind of get out of the way of your own heart a bit and write from the perspective of someone else. But of course, you can only really do it effectively if your heart's invested in the storyline of it. So I was able to sing it and perform it really, like a lot of that stuff in the song is stuff that I would have done, not all of it. So we wrote it from the perspective of someone else, someone who's like, I'm always, there's a big difference between sorry and amends. I don't know.
Yes.
There's a lot of people, including me, who've said 1,000 sorries, but never an amends, and I think there's a difference.
Yeah.
So that's that song. And I'll just speak about that as well for a sec.
Of
Jimmy
course.
one thing Jimmy and John did, because me and Jimmy wrote with other artists so much for their albums. There was part of me when I was doing those two songs that were like, right, we'll just record these two songs, then we'll send them to Tim McGraw and we'll get him to sing them, because John works in the Nashville thing and I knew how good the songs were. And it was the first time that I'd heard bounces from Jimmy where I was like, wow, I love how this sounds. Maybe Jimmy's the right producer for me, because we were just kind of messing around, friends in the studio. And when I heard those two bounces that we heard 3 years ago, pretty much how the songs ended up on the album. And Some Things Break came really naturally as well. Some Things Break was more specifically about the kind of just the like sigh and acceptance without a fight of like, oh my gosh, this ain't working, And it came pretty quick. Jimmy's got separation in his studio. He's got a wall that he pulls across. So John could sit there playing the piano and I could be singing live as he was playing in the other room. And then Jimmy would comp like that.
Yeah, man, it's a beautiful track, so a lot to be proud of there. I think one of the things I wanted to ask you on record that we've talked about off record with the success of this record and obviously your previous work, has your attitude to success changed over the years as you've produced more music, become more self-reflective? What do you, how do you, is success a dirty word for you, Ben? Do you like it as a word, or do you find it difficult? I know you mentioned previously, off record, you have a little bit of an issue with praise and things like that. So how do you define success now, and how has your relationship with it changed?
Man, that's we need to do like a 3 hour long form
We
podcast.
do, yeah. Yeah.
I was always really afraid of it, but I think that was kind of that was kind of an ego trip as well. Honestly, I only accepted, I'm not just saying this to be like fake humble or whatever, but I only accepted about 2 years ago. I remember the feeling of my heart changing. I only accepted that I'd been successful in music like 2 years ago. Up to
Right.
then, I was like so hard on myself and just it was a load of nonsense, really. I mean, it was an ego trip, but I think I'm really lucky. I did have like what the world would see as like a commercially successful career, and I've been afforded lots of comfort and like a bed and a roof above my head and a TV. I'm looking at there's a PS5 in the corner of my
Yeah.
room. As like two guitars, I've got a backpack that works. I've got a phone. It's smashed, but I've got a phone. I
Yeah.
dropped weight on it at the gym by accident. A new
Right.
phone, and so I mean, dirty words are a good way to put it. That's how I can feel about it sometimes. But dude, like I remember coming off stage in at Hop Farm Festival in 2012, we were on after Tallest Man on Earth. Bob Dylan was on 2 hours later.
Right.
Tent was full. We got paid an outrageous amount of money to play it. And I remember coming off and like crying in my porter cabin like a child, and just like feeling like my heart was just like falling apart through my own poor behavior.
Right.
So for someone like me, you know, for someone who has the kind of head that I do, it's not what keeps me well. You know, what keeps me well is like being in service, having a commitment in this fellowship that I'm in, praying,
Yeah.
meditating. And I don't mean meditating in like the kind of Western sense, you know, I mean meditating like focused thought. I don't mean like candles and like, you know, like naked guys and girls running around and
Yeah.
whatever, you know. And just kind of like seeking, you know, a God of my own understanding, because the hole in my heart has never been in the shape of that stuff. At the same time, I feel today like I've been given a gift from what I choose to call God, and being given a gift of songwriting. And I know that it lights people's hearts up. I see the messages, and I know that it soundtracks people in moments of suffering and intensity. And I feel like it's my calling and my purpose for now.
Yeah.
So
Beautiful man.
that's kind of how I feel about that. But it's ever changing. You know, whenever I'm chasing it and I get so busy and I'm forgetting to do the things that keep my heart straight, I get sick really fast. And I've got
Yeah.
lots of friends, people that I'm sure you know as well, who had the whole world and chose to leave it, you know, because it was too much for them. And I've e equally got friends who are, you know, m really rich, successful rock stars who can have any dish from the buffet that they want at any time, who are sad, you know. And that can be me as well. I'm not better than anyone, you know. I kind of just got into enough pain like 6 years ago to go like, oh, like all my thinking isn't working here, you know. I need to admit that I'm wrong before I can get happy, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Again, that self-reflection is strong. I think I had a few more questions, but we'll leave that to our 3-hour podcast that we do down the road. I'll fit two more in. The first one is a big one. It sort of follows on from the success one, and it's the idea of legacy. Now, just your previous answer there, it sounds to me like you want to leave a legacy of connecting with people, songs that soundtrack people's moods, soundtrack people's sadness, their happiness. But that's me knowing you and listening to your songs. But what, as an artist, what kind of legacy do you want to leave? What kind of message do you want to leave the world? I'm not saying when you die, I'm not even saying when your career is done, but if you consider the legacy of Benjamin Francis Lethwich and what you leave as an artist, what do you think about that?
As a person, I want to be remembered as useful. And as a singer and a songwriter, some you know, songs that make that light people's hearts up, you know, and also break them in a good way, you know, because my experience is when my heart gets broke. Everyone loves that. You know, why is it that when people are sad, they put on like Cannonball or This Year's Love or something, you know? People love doing that. I think they do anyway. At least I do. Maybe I'm the only one that admits it, but you know, like just something that really makes people feel. And you know, that's the sentence I've probably heard most in my life is, I used to listen to At the Sands when I was going through my first breakup, you know. I literally Or when I was traveling, you know, and I don't mind that. I'm pleased to have, you know, one song that did that. So I think to soundtrack intense moments and be useful kind of sonically and lyrically in those moments.
That's cool, man. That's cool. And I'm sure we'll talk about this down the road. In terms of the promo questions, then, is there any message for your family back in your friends and supporters around the world now? You have a global audience. We'll talk about your touring around the UK in a second, but is there a message for those people that have supported you around the world, locally, regionally, nationally, through your career, and will continue to do so as you go on in the next few years?
Yeah, just that I love you and I love your music and I love the energy that we all share. I mean, we could sit here and list off all the legends, yourself included, Sam and Haley, Keegan Snaes, David Ward McLean, Colour of Fire, of course, Sheds, Holly Tamar, old Isaac up at Strensel, like what's going on back there. And just good music, man. I mean, we all remember those times, the open mics at Habit and the Old Star. And I think we're a reflection of the people that we surround ourselves with. Chris Helm, of course, Andy Gaines, Cardboard Rate, the whole deal. I'm probably a bit out of the loop with all that stuff, but I think I'm,
They're still there, they're still going, you know.
just legends, man. People who love music and we're all human and everyone makes mistakes, but there's definitely like those Num Num Club nights back in the day were just like so special, It was like to be involved, to be welcomed into that as a 17-year-old probably changed my life,
Yeah, man.
I remember leaving school and like walking through town with my guitar on my back going, oh my, like nervous to meet Chris Helm,
That's it, isn't it?
on my way there to like sing some songs. And I sang songs at those shows that I'll be singing on tour in a month's time,
Yeah, beautiful. And that is the last question. The promo question is there anything that I've missed, Ben, that you want to promote today? You are going on tour next month. Is there anything you'd like to plug and promote before we finish up?
No, just that I can't wait to get on tour. I'm touring with a great piano player called Jamie Squire. He's one of my best friends, in my opinion, one of the best musicians in the world. We're going to be playing a mix of new songs and old songs, and I'm just grateful for your time. And yeah, the new album's out now. I think it's beautiful, and if people have a minute, I'd love for them to listen to it.
Absolutely, me too. Go and listen to it now, everybody. And thank you, Ben, so much for your time. It is always a pleasure, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart, mate.